Thanks. My name is John, and I am an alcoholic. Like I gotta tell all you that. I'm preaching to the choir here this morning. I know everybody in the place. And I'm always glad when people think that I'm a God person, because that's my job. And it's nice to hear that. It's good? Okay. I got my audio man in the back there. I said, raise your hand if it sounds okay. So it's okay. So I'm going to start off with a prayer for us, and part of it's going to be for me, for what I say. God, we thank you for your gracious gift of sobriety, for what that means for us and for those whose people that we cross their paths. I ask your blessing for what I'm going to say, that my words would be your words, and you would have me say something that would help somebody. In Jesus' name, amen. So, I wasn't always this spiritual person. When I first came to AA, Jesus and God was two of my favorite cuss words. And I had to, I spent days when I did my inventory trying to make amends to God. And I still now, I have a cross hanging from a mirror in my pickup truck. And it's actually, you can feel the nails that are in Jesus' hands and in his feet. And I like to reach over there every now and then and just feel what he went through for us to give us eternal life. And it's very moving to me to do that. When I first came to AA, actually I didn't come, I was brought. I was at the end of my second marriage. My second wife, was an alcoholic, she's dead now. But we would go out all the time, and the next morning when I woke up, you know how you are when you wake up from drinking all night, she would say, do you know what you did last night? And then I'd get the whole spiel. Finally, I said, I don't want to hear what I did last night. Don't ever say that again. Some months later, she said, I don't care if you know what you did last night or you don't know. You don't live here anymore. Pack up your belongings and get out. And I cleaned that up a lot. So that's what I did. I had a pickup truck with a camper on it, and I stuffed my stuff in there, and I'm tootling around town. This was in Seattle, Washington, and I was in the Coast Guard for 26 years, and I was on a ship out of Seattle that time, and we patrolled the Bering Sea and the Gulf of Alaska. And so I knew every bar in town. Everybody knew me at every bar. They knew when I walked in the door what I was going to drink, and they knew that you better back it up with another one if then he's gone out of the first one, because I'm going to be reaching for it again in a second. So I didn't know what the heck I was going to do. And this was at the beginning of credit cards. In the beginning of credit cards, if you had a bank with a checking account, the banks sent you a credit card with $500 limit on it just to suck you into using the credit card. And they did that with my wife and I both got a card that was $500. And I had a brainstorm there, and I says, I know what I can do. I got a $500 limit on the credit card. Alcoholic thinking. I'll drink that up and then I'll kill myself. I went for 10 days. At the end of the 10 days, it was about 9 o'clock in the evening, and I remember the bar was in North Seattle, and I said, I'm not having any fun. I'm going to go get a motel room and kill myself now. In order to kill myself, my wife had prescriptions from two different physicians for tranquilizers. I don't know how much I had to do with that. And she had 14 pills. I took those 14 pills, and then I went to the drugstore, and I'm looking for something like I went to pharmacy school, and I'm looking for something that I could enhance those pills with that would kill me. And I decided on some cold medicine or something. It was pills. I took 63 cold tablets and 14 tranquilizers. And I rented a motel room. And I went in the motel room. And I actually felt I had an out-of-body experience. I felt like I had walked through the door without opening it. My spirit went through the door, and I was in just outside the door to the room, and it was like a gravel. And I was rolling around in the gravel. I could actually feel the gravel. And I knew that the reason what I was trying to do was I was trying to not die. And came back in, got back in my body, and I went in the bathroom, and I was sicker than a dog, and I'm throwing up, excuse me, and I heard the woman in the room next to me, and she said, that man's throwing up again. And so I don't know how many times I threw up. That was in the Marine, I went in the Marine Hospital in Seattle, Washington. I walked in the door, and the nurses were checking in some people, and they yelled code blue and stuffed three IVs in my arms, and I don't know what the heck I looked like, but it wasn't good. And so what I started to go through the DTs then, and if you've had the DTs, you know that's a busy time. And so I don't know if it was 3 days or 5 days, but I was on the second floor of the Marine Hospital, and there was 250 or 225 patients on either end. And I was in with those IVs in my arms, and light would go on over somebody's bed, and they'd do some crazy stuff, laugh at me, and then the light would go off. And then it would move over to another bed, and it would do the same thing. And I got the idea that if I could recite the 23rd Psalm until the sun rose the following morning, I would be okay. So I bugged the nurses, bugged them, and they finally got me a Bible, and I started reading the 23rd Psalm out loud. And a guy came out of the room next to the nervous station screaming, and he used some obscenities, like, what the heck's going on here? And he looked at me, and he turned around, walked back in his room in silence, and he said, I guess we all have our own troubles. There was two elevators in front of the nurses' station, and all night long, the elevator would come up to my floor, and a figure that you couldn't see his face, had a hat over his head, would come out and stand in front of me and look at me, and I knew that that was Satan. And he'd go back in the elevator, and the elevator would come up again, and a 300-pound pig would get out of the elevator and come walking over to me. And he's looking at me. And I went through that all night long, still reading the 23rd Psalm out loud, and you could see downtown Seattle through the windows by the elevator. And when the sun came up, I believed that I would be okay. And I asked the nurses if they had a chapel in there, and they did. So I went down to the chapel spiritually, and I thanked God that I was still alive. But I also told God that he might want to hook me up with some of these preachers, because I'm a miracle and I could have some good stories. Yeah. I have some good stories anyway. So I got transferred from that ship to a ship out of Icebreaker out of North Carolina, Wilmington, North Carolina, and I'm driving over to North Carolina. I had 30 days leave, and I'm going through Montana, and I'm fishing. I caught a nice rainbow trout, and I had it for supper. And my alcoholic brain said to me, "You know, you haven't gone to a meeting in over 2 weeks now, and you're still sober." That's what it said the first day. The second day it said, "Maybe you ought to try one and see if you're an alcoholic or not." I bought a six-pack to try one. I had one beer the first night. Got down on my knees and said my prayers. Read the 24-hour book, and went to bed with a smile on my face. The second night, I had two beers. Same routine. Got down on my knees, read the 24-hour book, prayed to God, got into bed. I got a bigger smile on my face now. The third night, I had the remaining three beers and decided I was doing so good that I could go downtown and see how it would be down there. Now, this is April in Montana, and it's like 24 degrees outside. I went downtown. I went in the bar downtown. That's the last thing I remember. That 12 degrees woke me up in the front seat of my pickup truck about 4 o'clock in the morning. I went in the back of my camper, and there was dope papers all over the place, beer cans all over the place. I don't know who. Was I in there? I don't know. It took me 5 months to quit drinking. I went to treatment. And when I went to treatment, I had already gone to treatment once. And the man in charge of the treatment center was a Coast Guard captain. And at the end, they give you a little certificate, your diploma of sobriety. And when he handed me my diploma, my commanding officer, my executive officer, my operations officer, my boss were all in there. And they had convinced the guy to send me through the second time because he wasn't going to do it. I had 19 and a half years in the Coast Guard then, and if I got discharged, I wouldn't get any retirement or anything. But we know that that's not going to stop me from drinking if I want to drink. So ended up that was a good deal. So we go further along in my life, and my first wife had got custody of my kids. When I got divorced from her, she wanted the oldest girl, and I took the twins, boy and a girl. She got them back because I didn't know that she was an alcoholic and really drinking bad. When my oldest daughter was 2 months short of graduating from high school, she came home from school and her mother was laying dead on the couch. She knew what to do. She called the Coast Guard and they gave me a transfer for, it was supposed to be for 4 weeks. They gave me 6 weeks. They ended up giving me 6 weeks. And I went through my daughter graduating from high school. She had a job. She was working for a vet. And she didn't want to go with me, but I had to take the other two with me. They were 13 years old. So here I am. Here I am, newly sober, and I got three teenagers that hate me. I got down on my knees and I said, God, I don't know how the heck I'm going to do this, but if you'll, I was still in the bargaining with God era, you know. You do this, I'll do that. I said, if you'll help me raise these two kids, I won't get with any women, I won't drink, you know, just blah, blah, blah. Now, I had been fed by my mother, by the Coast Guard, and by two wives, okay? I didn't know how long it took to boil an egg. I was good with putting a piece of bread in the toaster, but that was about as far as I could go. So I spent a lot of time at the library trying to learn a whole bunch of stuff, you know, what's nutritious for my kids and what should they be fed and all that kind of stuff. And all three of my kids ended up saying, you were a pretty good cook. I told them God was a pretty good cook. I've always depended on God all the time. And I was working, I got the kids in back to Virginia where the Coast Guard transferred me to. And I got this thinking of, it was like May or June, I think. I was going to make a big deal out of Thanksgiving, cook a big Thanksgiving dinner and all that. And I made a gravy that took 6 hours to make. You had four or five changes to do and all that. It was the best gravy I've ever had in my life, but I would never do that again. So my kids are going through school. And they want to work. And I said, you can work as long as your grades are up. And all my kids, all three of my kids were really good workers, all their lives still are. And every time I visited them and ever talked to one of their bosses said, them are some really good kids you got. I had to have somebody else tell me that. Because when I had my kids and I was drinking, I didn't care about my kids. Neither did either one of my wives. You stay out of my way and her way, you're good. Don't get in the way. Don't do anything at school that we got to come and visit for. I was making 3 month patrols between Hawaii and Japan. And when I was gone, my kids had their friends over to our house. When I was there, I never saw my kids. They were always at somebody else's house. Right now, the twin daughter doesn't talk to anybody in the family. I can't imagine what's going on with her. But my oldest daughter and my son are my two best friends. And I'm their best friend. My son's in prison for some cocaine stuff. And I talked to him for an hour on, or half an hour on Sunday. Today he'll call me at supper time tonight because I told him I was doing this. And on Wednesday, on Sunday, he reads a passage out of the Bible to me. And when he's done, we talk about that. We talk about God's message. But before we start that, we take turns asking God to bless us when we hear the words out of his Bible. And it's awesome. It's awesome. So we get down with this, and I got transferred to Alexandria, Virginia, outside of Washington, D.C. And I was very active in AA over there. And I have a lot of good friends. I just called a guy last week. He's got 52 years. And Mike, I got a lot of AA friends. It's because of people like you and events like this that I'm sober one day at a time for 45 years. So then I come to the lecture. I was hoping that Terry Bateman would be here, but she's not. This is a story about her. I got to the point where I wanted to commit suicide again. And I was staying at Ballard's Campground in I got down on my knees before supper or after supper, and I said, I'm here again, God. And for whatever reason, I got a meeting directory out, and I found out the Lakeshore meeting was like three miles from where I was at. I drove down there, and it appeared that somebody warned them that I was coming because they were ready. Mark and Tom were at the door, and during the course of the meeting and after the meeting, they asked me if I would join a big book study with them. They were taking three guys through the big book. Two of them were repeats, and the other one was a brand new guy, and I said, sure. Because I told God I'd do whatever he put in my path. Terry, I don't know if she was the chairperson for this convention, but she was directing the traffic at our home group. She was chairing that meeting. And she said, I need some volunteers. She said, what are you willing to volunteer for? And I said, anything. Terry in her sneaky voice said, anything? I said, anything. She said, would you be the early bird speaker on Friday? I said, absolutely. And then I wanted to panic. What did I just say yes to? It was good. I kept saying yes, I kept saying yes, and God kept blessing me, kept blessing me. And my experience with God is that you're asking way low on the mark when you ask him to do something. I'm not talking about material things, I'm talking about spiritual things. And God is going to bless you in abundance. And I'll tell you the story about my family. My oldest daughter, was the day manager of the biggest sports bar in Houston, Texas. They would get like 700 people in there. They had 53 televisions, 4 wall televisions, and one of the proudest things she did was she took me up and showed me how to change the antennas. We all know what it's like to hang around a bar and what you end up turning out like. I would go up to there, like for holidays or maybe just a weekend or something. It's about a 90-mile drive from Galveston. I was living in Galveston then, and it was really nice with my daughter. She always had some handy thing around the house she wanted me to fix, but she wanted to learn how to do it too, and that was cool. So I started praying to God, God, please help Sherry to find another job. When you pray to God, you can't have any expectations. That's my experience. You can't have an expectation. If you have an expectation, whatever you're asking for is going to block out what God sent you, and it went right by you over here, and it was so much more than what you asked for. You got to pay attention. Anytime you pray to God, you got to pay attention, because you don't know what it's going to look like. Sherry called me and she said, Dad, you're never going to believe this. Whenever anybody calls me, and I have people that I sponsor call me and say the exact same thing all the time, I know what they're going to tell me. They're going to tell me they had a miracle and God did something. She said, I had a girl that used to work for me when she was going to law school. And she just graduated from law school, and she called me and she said, I just graduated from law school, Sherry, and I'd like you to run my law office. Sherry said, I don't know if I want to do that. Can I come over there on Tuesdays for a couple hours, maybe 2 or 3 times, and see if it's something I would like to do? And the girl said, I'll check with the guy I'm buying the office from and see what he says. And he said, yeah, sure. So she went over there for a couple hours the first time. And the second time she went back on Tuesday for a couple hours, he called her into the office and he said, Sherry, how much do I have to pay you to quit your job? She said, I don't know, but I'll go home and figure it out. She came back the next, Larry was his name. She came back the next day and told Larry with the figures that she came up with. Larry paid her $400 more than she asked for. Larry and his wife ended up being the mother and father that Sherry never had. Larry's wife went out as soon as Sherry said she was going to be working in the office. Larry's wife took her out and took her shopping for some work clothes. Not bar clothes, work clothes. It ended up, she gave Sherry a lot of motherly advice that her mother never gave her. Anytime Sherry had a problem, she could call his wife and they were right there. When I went up, they also took Sherry to lunch every day and they said grace before they ate. They were Christian people. I had no idea how much God was going to give me for those prayers. I told Sherry that, and I don't know why I even came up with this idea, because it never occurred to me what a paralegal did. I said it would probably be a good idea, if you're going to be doing the office of a lawyer, if you went to paralegal school. And she agreed. And it was 3 days a week for 7 months. She's had a certified paralegal license since she was 30. She's now 61. She now runs her own business, has her own house, has a nice car, and she's an animal person. She's got a 3-bedroom house. I went up there, it was really cool. She's looking, and she only has a certain amount of money that she can end up paying, you know, make payments for on the house. And so I'm praying like a devil to help, you know, please help her find that house wherever it is. And there was a couple there that had this house, and they had it on the market for a little more than Sherry was willing to pay for it. And when they got around, she went and looked at the house, and when she got around to asking them what the price was, they said, well, we've had it on the market for a while and we're not selling it, so this is the price. It was $40 a month less than, $40 a month less than Sherry could afford. And I got a picture of her sticking the key in the door to open her house. Certified paralegal means that every 2 years the state has to examine her, and she has to go to classes and stuff so she keeps up with the law. The best thing about Sherry is what I can tell you what the lawyers say about her. She's working for probably a half a dozen lawyers. Most of them are, you know, they might be 30 or 40 years old. She knows more about the law than they do. They call her Inspector Gadget. When they got a problem, they always call Inspector Gadget so she can tell them what the answer is. So I'm very grateful for my civilian life sobriety. But I want to tell you about when I went to Lakeshore, and I had gone through the steps on a number of occasions, but it was the steps. And At that time, I was a blah, blah guy, okay? The Serenity Prayer and the Lord's Prayer was blah, 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 blah. Okay, that's over. I'm not like that anymore. I can't tell you how many people have called me because they found out that I'm speaking here and prayed for me. It's very serious business. I sponsor a number of people, and I got somebody here taking them through the Big Book Awakening. That's the book that I use to take people through the Big Book. And when I first went through the Big Book, Mark and Tom invited me to join that study group with them. Mark said, we're going to start with a prayer. I said, wow, what an awesome idea to start with a prayer. He could have not said anything for 3 months and I would have been on high. Start the meeting with a prayer, the set-aside prayer. Please set aside all the things. Please help me set aside all that I think that I know in favor of a new experience. I became fanatic about taking people through the Big Book. I was doing one in the morning and one in the afternoon in this area, and then also in Galveston. I was running off the Wi-Fi at the local grocery store, taking people through the book. That's my job. And I always have to tell people, you can pay this forward, you can't pay me back for this, but you can pay me for, you can pay forward through it. So I went like that for, I'm taking probably 30 people a year through the Big Book. I'm not sure who's getting more out of that, them or me. I got two guys that I'm taking through the Big Book right now, and it's always a new experience to give this away, to see them light up. There's a guy in Canada, and I told this story to somebody else, I don't think I told it to you yet. Where I go fishing in Canada for August and September, and this guy and his wife go to the local A meeting. It's way out in the country. They say there's 100 people in town, but they gotta be count for 100 miles to get that many. And he had 32 years sobriety, but you ever get those people that, you know, they're stalking you or something. They either want to ask you something or tell you something, finally, I was leaving the meeting with him one night, and I said, would you like me to take you through the Big Book? And he got all excited, and he said, I thought you'd never ask. That's not the only time I heard that. I took him and he took his wife through the Big Book, and what time is it?
11:00.
Okay. They took everybody within 50 miles of them through the Big Book, the steps. I'm humbled by that I can start something like that. But I do it every time that I can. Not for my benefit. It's awesome. I know what it's like to be out there and be in a crappy sobriety when you could be happy, joyous, and free. People say, I've heard people in AA say, well, you can't be happy all the time. I'm happy all the time because of people like you and because of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been to Founders Day maybe 15 times. I went to the World Convention in San Antonio, Texas. I sponsor a couple of guys in Texas right now. One guy's dad died the other day. He's 50 years old, not his dad, but he's 50 years old. And I called him to pray for him and with him, and he was good with that. When people say, we're not to be doctors, we can't tell people what to do about this or that, I've got 45 years in Alcoholics Anonymous of people telling me their problems, and I have a lot of answers that they gave me, and I try to give it away. And it's what makes my life happy, joyous, and free. I'm going to shut up early. I'm glad that you asked me to do this. I'm very grateful for my sobriety. Thank you.